Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
And APB, American Protection Bureau, voted number one best on Long Island for all your security needs. Call 631-390-9050. That's 631-390-9050. APB.
You need a body shop? You need engine repair? Auto Excellence, Collision Specialists, 631-
For the Cardinals receiver.
Hey, we're live.
All right, welcome back to Long Island's number one pro wrestling broadcast. Monty DeFaro, only seen here out of, well, no longer into music. We're still in our man caves. I know Jimmy's in Wahoo Saloon, and I'm in the Mike Monty man cave. But next week, Jimmy, I'm back in studio, and we'll start reforming back to the way it used to. I want to thank everybody for joining us Thursday. Yo, Jimmy, I was thinking, how long have we been doing this for?
Do you really want the real answer? I'll give you the real answer.
Yeah. I mean, wait, first answer me a few things. I can't remember. Do we always shoot on Thursday nights?
Wow. You know, I'm trying to flash back to the early days with John. I don't know. Didn't we do Fridays even?
We did Sundays with the Sawyer show. But when we went to Monty and the Pharaoh, was it always Thursdays?
No, you know what? I could be wrong, but I could swear we started on Wednesdays, but we moved it. I think we moved it. I could be wrong, though, bro. I'm not sure.
Because I was thinking to myself, it's like forever that we've always done this during the NFL draft every year.
Right. Well, I would say we're on like 6 years and 8 months.
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, it all started with me sitting in a parking lot calling in to you and John, and I think Braun Strowman was in the car. Remember that?
That's right. I remember that. Quick shout-outs before we get going, Jim. We've got Benny Scaller in the room, Jason Morning, Angela Harper, the original player. Right?
What's up, player everybody? Fan.
Miss Maria Davis, who's recovering. She says, much love, Jimmy Farrow. A little heart to you, my friend.
Maria!
RJ Hudson, always good to see you.
RJ.
From the 30, there's one Benny. And Joe, what a day. Lowry, by the way, give me a recap. And Gerard is in a room who was on Sunday with Joe. What a day.
What's
Lowry.
Up? Hey, Gerard.
What was your opinion of the – let's talk candid of that interview. We'll talk about the two interviews Joe did. He's been a little interview heavy. Give me your Farrell recap. We haven't really been – you've been busy, so
on the two interviews,
mm-hmm.
on both of them. Well,
sure, why not?
Look, I want to get this in, Joe. You gotta make Cole talk with Gerard. Make it happen, dude. Make that happen, Mike. I don't know how you feel about that. I want those two to have at it. You know, leave the rest of us normal people out of it. No disrespect, but that's really Gerard. That's really more for Lee Cole. I'm sure you know that anyway. You know what I'm saying? But look, Joe is what's the right word? Joe SportsCenter to me. Does that make any sense, Mike?
does.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like Sports Center, and there ain't nothing wrong with Sports Center. So, you know, it's been good. Justin Race, I have not had a chance to sit and watch the whole thing, but I made sure to hop around on it and check it out. Interesting that Phil was there too. You know what? At the end of the day, and I think some of your questions came in too, right, Mike? During that, like, you know,
I don't know if you have questions. I couldn't listen. I started listening this morning.
Right.
But I've got rules that I have to abide by, you know?
Understood. I think one of your questions was read. You know, the bottom line is we got to know, and that's the credit to the guys who did the interview, and with Gerard also, we got to know who these people are and what it's like to, you know, the normal question that most wrestling journalists won't ask. So, I mean, it was good, you know? I enjoyed it. What do you think? Here's the real question. What do you think you would have done with Justin Race, Mike?
Good question.
It's fun. It's fun asking these questions.
Well, no, I'll be honest with you. I wasn't a Harley Race guy, but one of the big things I would hit on, like, how him and his mother were getting along, because the mother was not easy when she spoke on Dark Side about Harley. I mean, Harley came off like a real piece of shit. I got to be honest.
Okay, I didn't
see that. According, you know, the way the wife was presenting it, absolutely. Okay. You know, okay. And think about it this way. It was like, you know, Harley got away with a lot of stuff because he was Harley Race. And then they try to sell it, Jimmy, at some point in there. I think Harley is drunk and he runs his boat into some people and he gets sued for like $300,000. And it's like, you know, Mick Foley's on there like, oh, well, you know, you have all your money saved and before you know it, it's gone. Well, hey, here's the deal, dude. Don't get fucked up driving your fucking boat drunk. I mean, wait the fuck. I mean, I would say that. How did you feel about your dad going out there and fucking, you know, could have critically injured some people?
Yeah, yeah. That's a touchy subject around these parts, dude. You know, getting in a boat and doing something drunk, you're a fucking asshole.
Oh, dude, I, you know what? I'm sorry.
You're a fucking asshole.
I wasn't thinking about that. I do apologize for that.
It's fine. No, well, it's not fine, but, you know, I understand, man. I don't expect you to have that in the top of your head, you know, but, I mean, come on. What the fuck is Harley Race? And what makes Harley Race any different than anybody else, man? Fucking idiot.
Well, that's
fucking stupid.
No, it is
no
stupid.
Disrespect. I'm just being honest. Whether you're alive or if you've passed away, if you did shit like that, you're an asswipe. What are you doing? Or you're having a momentary asswipe moment. You know, really could have caused much more damage, obviously. Idiot.
Listen, you know what? We all do things differently, right? It's like, you know, people watch the channel and watch us on cable for all different reasons, right?
Right.
No point am I ever going to say I'm a wrestling expert. In fact, I know Jimmy said my sound wasn't working, but I mean, you know, we made the announcement that the 30 is getting put to pasture and we're going to a different type of format, a wrestling type quiz show where experts like yourself, What a Day Joe, Dan, Benny, right, Bruce, you guys. And the best part is the part of the family. We're going to invite the family to be
nice.
Part nice. Of it. And nice. You really think I honestly, on a business standpoint, I really think I could sell some sponsors on this deal.
Yeah.
Done exactly the way I think it should be done.
Very cool. And I love the fact that, you know what, Mike, and I think I've said this to you before, the fact that you want to have some of the members, you know, and part of the family from the chat on, I've said this to you before. I believe right now, somewhere in this country, there's a kid working in cornfields that can hit a ball 500 feet and he doesn't even know it. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm trying to get at? You know, like, life is strange like that, you know? What I'm saying is that the people in the chat are just as much a pro wrestling expert as I am. I'm not, you know, I hate that word, Mike. I'm not a pro wrestling expert. I'm a guy who loves pro wrestling. I might know a lot of crap, but I've been watching it a long time. I better remember something.
You know? Well, I think the point is, Jimmy, is you do have a substantial amount of knowledge. And here's the best part about this whole this new format. You're not going to know what the questions are, so you're not going to be able to fake it. You know what I mean? If you know your stuff, you're going to win.
Yeah.
And you don't. And
Wait a minute. Hold on. Time out. What are you suggesting? Like, the guys on the panel actually know the questions beforehand?
Oh, you know, we all, you know how the 30 was rolling at some point. We had setups going on there.
I never knew nothing, did I? Wow.
No.
I didn't think so. That would not be organic.
Listen, I'm not going to say other people did, but I kind of – listen, wow. Running the 30, man, it was their show, but I
– Right. Right.
Something smelled funky. Let me just put it that way. Something was funky.
Interesting. Yeah. Now the audience at home unfortunately can't hear Bruce right now, but are you referring to our awesome crooked referee who I love?
Sure. I think some of the panel on that show were a little bit crooked, buddy.
Oh, so. I could definitely see like Joe mailing free pizzas to the house of Bruce or Dan like mailing a cat. Here's the one that, you know, was in the neighborhood that I didn't take in. You have this cat, you know, right. Give me a few points.
Jimmy, I'm gonna say something, but I hope I don't anger people out there, especially
oh, no.
Joe What a Day, because it's out of
which means you're going. Which means you're going to.
I gotta tell you, Joe Myers on Facebook today posted some pictures, and you know, you have some of these programs where they take it. You know, Maria Davis does it too. They take their beautiful women, both of them, but they take them and they put them on different like hairstyles and shit like that. I gotta tell you, Joe Myers smoking today. I was kind of crushing on her today, man.
You were crushing on Joe. What did she superimpose? What sort of hair? What are we talking here?
She just had like this long flowing hair. She had two of them. Okay. I would love to show it to you, but I mean, she was
like 60s style or 80s style. Like when you say long flowing hair, I prefer 60s, 70s natural long flowing hair. What do you
know? No, it wasn't 60s, 70s. It was smoking. That's all I got to say. Smoking.
Well, smoking is smoking. I mean, you know, I'm sure the ladies back in the Roman days were pretty smoking too.
Let me put it this way. There could be some private time in the man cave with Mike Mom.
Oh, this is okay. Now I understand why you said someone might get mad. You filthy, filthy man. That is not right. Are you soap or Vaseline? Let's go further.
We could go dry. I think I'd be all right.
Dry? Wow, you are excited. All right, next subject.
All right, buddy. Harvey Weinstein accuses Slam an overturned conviction. Profoundly unjust and shaking with shock and outrage, Harvey Weinstein's accusers slammed the decision to overturn his New York rape conviction, saying it's profoundly unjust and a major step back. Thoughts on the Harvey Weinstein case, my friend?
Well, unlike other things we've been discussing recently, I think Harvey Weinstein is basically the Adolf Hitler of molestation.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I'm being serious. That's what I think. It's what I think. And there's been enough ladies who've come out with the balls and the proper amount of proof for my eyes. And obviously, as we say, due process in due process's eyes, that Harvey Weinstein is a big slobbish predator. And it is what it is. You know, he could be shocked and appalled all he wants, but tough titties.
So let's talk about Weinstein a little bit. So there's a man who was a multimillionaire, billionaire, I don't know, right? And he used his power to have women have sex with him in order to make movies and everything else. And if they didn't go along with it, they were punished.
Right.
This, I agree with Jimmy as being what's wrong, and he deserved to go to jail for something like that, because you should not have that kind of power to dictate in someone's life like that.
Right. Agreed.
And when a woman or a man, whatever that scenario is, has sex with him, it's different about the next case we're going to speak about, because they're feeling like, hey, I got to survive. I might as well just have sex with this guy because I need to make my $1 million and be a star. And you feel that necessity, unlike the next thing we're going to talk about.
Right.
Do you agree with that statement?
I'm not disagreeing with that statement.
Okay. All right.
I'm fine. Yeah.
Well, then speaking of this, ex-WWE chairman Vincent Kennedy McMahon files a motion to force Janelle Grant lawsuit into arbitration. As Janelle Grant's lawsuit against the WWE, hold on, I'm just trying to move my mouse here. Sorry about it, buddy. Good God. And McMahon's counsel has filed a motion to take the matter out of public court. According to a new filing, McMahon's attorneys have cited the section of Grant's non-disclosure agreement that states any grievances of the two parties should be settled in private arbitration as opposed to public court. McMahon's team also categorically denies Grant's accusation alleging that she couldn't have been grieving the death of her parents in 2019 as they died much earlier, and also stating that Grant and her then fiancé lived in the same building of McMahon without incident. Jimmy, have at it, baby. Our boy Vincent Kennedy McMahon is now winning again.
You know what? And I don't know if Father Time is on his side, but I will state one thing that's a fact, Jack. Vince is going to be able to legally outlast her. As long as Father Time is on his side, he's going to outlast her. And this will go to arbitration. And this will be, you know, here's some extra coin. Have a nice day. Whether either party is a saint, I don't think either party's even close to being a saint, you know. And that's about the worst I'll get with Vince McMahon, because due process does still count for something in this country. Oh, where there's smoke, there's fire. Well, until Vince McMahon winds up behind bars, it looks like the fire got put out by the local dog. Okay? So basically, he's going to outlast her, period. You know, I mean, I don't think that she's a saint. I don't think that he's a saint. And I think that in the end, Vince will win, like Vince always wins. But Vince usually...
What about this, Jimmy? A non-disclosure was signed. We're just going to go revisionist history again.
Right.
She went out in the public and broke the non-disclosure because supposedly she wasn't getting paid her money.
Right.
Okay. They're also in the agreement, you're not allowed to go into public. They have a love letter from her.
Right.
I mean, you know, we were just talking about Weinstein. At what point should a Janelle Grant be punished for this? She should be punished for breaking all these things.
Look, I found out a long time ago that it's always, the accuser almost 1,000% of the time gets away with bloody murder when found to not be 100% correct. They get away with bloody murder, all right? It's not fashionable to go headhunting for Janelle Grant. It is very fashionable to go after the King Tut of the WWE, Vince McMahon, all right? People look at Vince McMahon as if he's some sort of Roman emperor. It's ridiculous, all right? People look at Vince McMahon like he can walk into a police precinct in Pennsylvania with a wad of cash, and out goes Jimmy Snuka scot-free. All right. They basically have him as Tony Soprano, who books wrestling matches. All right.
Oh, by the way, Joe Winaday says we're wrong on all accounts. No, Joe, we're not. Okay. You're reading the mumbo jumbo pro Janelle Grant paperwork, because, Joe, let's talk this legitimately, and I would debate this to you a million years. You go for the side of what the people want or what they're saying. The facts are this: she signed paperwork, money, and she broke that, and that is all.
Right.
Look.
Right.
Joe Winaday and Dan and whoever, the Vince McMahon haters out there, they owe a big apology. You know, they were big on reading this lawsuit, but not once, Jimmy, did I hear them speak about this love letter. They just did it like in passing, very quietly. Right. Oh, by the way, there was a love letter from Janelle Grant.
Right. Well, this may be a shock to those guys, and maybe it won't be, but my mind is not entirely made up. I want to see the process go through, but I believe the process will go to arbitration. I do believe that, and Joe, I did see your answer on the 30. I thought your answer was great, but here's the bottom line. Whether this case technically is about money or not, it's about money, and it's going to be about money. And when they're done, it's going to be settled where it's nobody's business, and she'll get a little more money, and she'll go away.
But Jimmy, punishment rendered. But there should be punishment rendered when you do this type of thing. That's a problem that goes on in this country. You can sue. This stuff wouldn't go on if you had to pay all the legal bills.
Right.
People wouldn't be taking that chance.
Right. People do it all the time. And I'm sure that Joe and Dan both realize that people do this all the time. This happens all the time, and it doesn't make it right, but this is what happens. You know, they get away with it. I've seen it. I've seen it in person with people I knew in the past. I mean, I've seen frame jobs. It's bullshit, you know? And at the end of the day, when their name is cleared, what the fuck? You know, the other guy walks away scot-free and had a bunch of accusations, and this guy's mentally ruined because he got put through a process that was unjust to begin with.
100%. You're so right with that.
And it's fucking horse shit. It happens all the time. She's out for fucking money. What is this? You know, it's not about money. Of course it's about money.
All the people that want to be real and be the case, he'll always be. Look, dude, again, I'll say it again. When was Palumbo on? A month ago?
Yeah.
I never, of all the wrestlers that we've had in, and I think I can clearly state this, Chuck Palumbo explained Chris Benoit better than any wrestler we've ever interviewed or any wrestler that's even been on the internet.
Right.
And there's still people out there going, I don't believe Benoit did it.
Well, you know what? It's funny, too, and peace to the late, great New Jack, man. Boy, did we love him, right? New Jack has, it's out there somewhere on YouTube. New Jack has one of the greatest responses regarding, and he said it on our show, too, about Benoit is just a steaming pile of shit, and he went on this rant, and oh, my God, Mike, if you've never heard this, I'll find it and send it to you, but basically, he's like, CTE? CTE, motherfucker, he goes, I'll show you 10 different videos of Chris taking a chair shot, and 10 out of 10, his hand is up blocking the shot. He goes, I took real bumps. I broke my body in half. He goes, and I didn't want to kill my kids. You know what I'm saying? He goes, that's a choice, motherfucker. You made a choice, you know? And that's what he did. He made a choice. Chair shots my ass. Steroids my ass, okay? When you do what that guy did, and then there's people who are still saying, oh, he didn't do it. Vince did it. There we go again. Vince is Tony Soprano again. I'm like, really? You really believe the bullshit spewing out of your mouth? Is it that hard to believe that the guy just was a psycho? Yeah, like the Joker said, ever have a bad day?
Let me ask you this. You know, we're going to kind of go off script here a little bit, but here's
God
the thing.
Damn it.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
So one of our videos out there is getting a lot of hits right now is about a year ago, or maybe a year and a half ago, we spoke to Tony Atlas, and it was when CM Punk was still in AEW. And then, you know, again, I know I don't know if you're a Punk guy anymore. You used to be a Punk guy, right?
I'm back. I'm glad Phil came home.
There's a point where CM Punk's in AEW, and before a wrestling match, he has a pro-abortion shirt on, okay?
Right.
And people are screaming basically more at me than you, basically that I'm anti-abortion, which was not the case. The question was, is there room for politics when you're in entertainment? Meaning this, when you're performing like a CM Punk is in a match, right? He shouldn't be screwing his politics. You want to screw your politics, do it outside of your job. When you're working at your place, if you believe in something, you still have to behave a certain way. So this goes to even like the NFL, the NBA, right? You're part of this country. You stand for the national anthem. Whether you want to or not, that's the rule you're supposed to follow, okay? And so, again, and let's even go back to Joe Whatday's interview with his son, and we talked about Benoit's son.
Right.
It's like, look, we're all flawed human beings. I totally get it.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys do things that are not normal behavior. In fact, if they weren't famous, they would be in jail.
Right.
You know? So my point, I guess my point to you, Jimmy, is there's a come a point where it doesn't matter how much good the athlete is, when they act a certain way, they should be treated as such, is my point. Like, let's go back to the CM Punk thing. Do you think there was room for CM Punk to do pro-abortion t-shirt before an AEW wrestling match?
Okay, here's the deal, and it may be a long answer, but I don't care because it's going to make sense when I'm done, all right? I love the word microcosm, and I kind of learned that through you, okay? This is where we've come as a society. We are now at the point where we feel like as a pro wrestler or as a professional athlete that we should do this and make our stance and divide everybody and have everybody yelling at each other. But we're in the generation of talking, not doing. We're in the generation where we are lucky enough, Mike, and this counts. I mean, you served, so you saw some stuff. But we're all very blessed because there ain't no World War III. There ain't no, my toys are bigger than your toys, and I'm going to push these buttons and see what happens. We're not there yet, but we're getting there. All right? I don't believe that pro wrestling and professional sports and Hollywood actors should be able to carry that sort of irresponsible weight when they divide this country. Okay? There's a reason why in World War II, when real threats existed, okay, the Mussolinis, the Hitlers, the Stalins, and all that came before during World War I into World War II, the Americans that lived through that, there's a reason why in World War II, FDR said baseball must go on. And it wasn't for Joe DiMaggio to come out and walk to center field in Death Valley in the Bronx and have something on the back of his jersey that said FDR is oppressive or whatever. We're being played by the machine. No. Okay? We knew then what was right and wrong, and I'd like to believe we still do. But when you start peeling back entertainment and it turns to this sort of level of reality, when I tune into a wrestling show, I want to get away from reality. When I tune into a baseball game, I want the baseball game to take me away. When I hear the national anthem before a sporting event, I want to think about how my father served, how his father served, how you served, how much respect I have for Woodrow Wilson, how much respect I have for FDR, how much respect I have for Winston Churchill. That's right, Winston effing Churchill. Okay, because if it wasn't for these sorts of men, we would not be sitting here peeling back every last complaint we can find. Society, get a grip. And if it's coming from me, oh man, what a mess.
Well done, Jimmy. Well done. And by the way, do you like my WrestleMania 2 t-shirt? By the way, one of my favorite WrestleManias of all time.
I don't care
what anyone else thinks.
When Vince was Vince was always taking chances. That was an idea worth giving a shot. Come on.
I absolutely agree. Yep. All right, man. WWE releases. Hold on, brother.
Yeah. Okay.
April 19th, we learned that Jinder Mahal, Xia Li, Yixin Quinn. I don't even know what the fuck that was, dude. I'm like, who's that?
Understood.
Veer Mahan. By the way, Veer Mahan was a major big-time baseball player. Did you know that?
No, I did not. I'm surprised.
They actually made a Disney movie about him, man.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I had no idea. Well, very interesting.
Sonya, and then we're going to play a pretty touching video of Trevor Lee, Cameron Grimes.
Right.
We'll play it, and then I want your feedback on that, Jimmy, because I got to tell you, usually you know me, right? It's like if we lost our job, Cameron Grimes ain't crying for our asses. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I was pretty touched by it, so we're going to play that video real quick, and then tell me what you think, okay?
Sure.
This is Trevor Lee, also known as Cameron Grimes. I just got off the phone with WWE, and unfortunately, I've been released from my contract. 5 years ago, the last thing that I was able to tell my father, Tracy Cadell, was that I signed with the WWE. I loved working here. I loved working at the WWE. I want to thank absolutely everybody that's helped me. I could sit here and name off a list of people, but the video might be a little bit too long. Even though you guys haven't seen me in the past year, I've been trying my best to learn from everybody that comes through, everybody that would let me sit there and listen. But if you're a fan of mine, I'm here to let you know that there's a damn fire lit under my ass, man. All I want to do is work. All I've ever wanted to do is work. This is all I got, man. But hey, the good news is there ain't going to be no stopping Trevor Lee now, baby. Let me tell you that. I love you guys. if you're watching this, I love you. We're going to figure this out. This isn't what I wanted to do at all. The WWE is all I've ever wanted to do and be. But if I have to go somewhere else now to show them that they missed out, I guess that's what I got to do. Thank you, guys.
All right, Jimmy, what'd you think?
Wow. Yeah, I can see why you felt that way. I mean, look, he was a good hand. He's really good in the ring, and he was really good on the mic. I know he worked hard. He seems very, very genuine. And it's interesting what you said before we watched the video. You know, it's weird. I got the thought as I was listening back to it that this is a guy who actually probably would give a crap if he knew about us and we lost our job. He seems like a really good guy. You know?
Yeah, but you know, I mean, I totally agree with you, but there comes a point, right?
This is Trevor Lee. Like,
I don't care if you're a billion-dollar company. It's not your job to keep people employed that are not making money for your company. Right.
Right.
And I mean, look, dude, to be honest with you, I like the Cameron Grimes thing with the Million Dollar Man. That was a good little vignette thing they had going on for a bit.
Yeah.
But overall, let's be honest, man. A lot of these NXT guys, I mean, look, if you're an NXT guy, do you want to go to the main roster at this point? Because it seems like curtains for you once you go up to the main roster.
Well, I mean, the plethora of independent names. Don't forget, NXT was built on what was going on around NXT. Like, you know, I knew of Kevin Owens as Kevin Steen in Ring of Honor. You know, we knew of AJ from TNA. We knew that Drew went to TNA. We were watching. So, like, a lot of these guys were becoming studly again or becoming studly for the first time on the indie scene, and then we were taking them. Now, a lot of these guys, that's not really the case as much with NXT. You know, they seem to be consciously growing their own guys. And look, it's like you've said before, a lot of the studs in NXT, they come up, they're tiny standing next to Randy Orton. They're tiny standing next to AJ Styles, for God's sakes.
You're right.
You know what I mean? And we both know Sami Zayn is a big dude. I've seen Sami in you know, a couple of rows in from the ringside. The guy, he's big. He's tall. He's a big, tall guy. You know? So a lot of these, like, smaller guys, they might kill it in NXT, but when they get up here, it's like, wow, you know?
It's a great, Jimmy, you know what? Everything you're saying is right on the mark, man. And to be honest with you, Cameron Grimes had to go. Jinder Mahal had to go.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain guys that just have to go. There's not enough room. And especially if you're going to start bringing these other wrestlers in to build the bloodline for this upcoming year, you've got to clear some roster space. I think Mr. X wrote out there, Tony Khan can pay people $500,000 a year to wrestle twice a year or whatever. That's a great point. But again, it's like at some point, where are you fiscally responsible? You know, we'll talk about it later on in the show. But like last night with the whole, you know, Tony Khan, you know, Jungle Boy bullshit that went on and his father came out. All I thought to myself, Jimmy, to be honest with you, I listened to the 30 and they were talking about it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking about anything they said. I was thinking about his father going, what the fuck are you doing to me? Making me come out here for your stupid baby wrestling gimmick. And this is embarrassing me now. Now I'm starting to lose credibility. That's what I was thinking when I'm watching that.
Interesting. Nothing else. I had a typical Pharaoh thought when I watched that. When I saw the father come out, I saw his face. And to me, it was saying, I thought you put the Coke in the third drawer from the bottom. That's what I thought, you know. Or perhaps he was looking for, you know, another player to add in the draft, and he realized he was in the wrong building on the wrong day, you know. But that whole Tony Khan thing, by the way, was absolutely laughable. Absolutely.
Listen, laughable's not the word, Jimmy. It was embarrassing.
It was
embarrassing.
Look, on do you mind if I dissect it fast? I mean, like, on so many levels, this was just done wrong, completely wrong. First of all, why are you doing it in that studio you did it in? And I laugh, by the way, when they always say WWE pipes in louder noises and stuff. Well, of course they do. But at least they're piping in to make it sound like 80,000 when there's 60,000 there. There was like this pipe in, and then they shot back, and I'm like, is that Georgia Championship Wrestling? What the hell's going on here? But it wasn't the goodness of Georgia Championship Wrestling. It felt plastic. I'm like, man, that's a terrible look. That gets to my next point. If you're going to do something like this on this level, save that for Wembley. What are you doing? I mean, you're supposed to be the CEO. And by the way, that's another thing that I find hilarious. Tony Khan is so desperate that he's willing now to take a bump. But here's the problem, Tony. You don't have it. You don't reek of this big evil aura, or even a goodly aura. For God's sakes, the president, Jack Tunney, who used to come in, had more of an aura than you do. And that guy would come and go like a fart, you know? And he had more presence and more authority. And you do this angle in front of this small studio audience? What are you doing? You should have done this in front of Wembley. You would have gotten a much better reaction, and it would have had a bigger impact, or at least you would hope that it would. And it's funny I used the word impact, because I felt, Mike, like last night, I was watching Impact Wrestling. I'm like, what? This feels like Spike TV during the latter days.
I was thinking to myself about when Vince took that stunner.
Right.
I enjoyed that. I actually enjoyed it. As ridiculous as it looked, it was funny, and it was good. Here's the thing. This is what I'm questioning.
Right.
So when me and Jimmy, when we started this, right, Jimmy, what was your main thing you used to say to me all the time? Mike, I don't care what we set up to do. I just want to punch up. You used to say that to me all the time. I want to punch up. And I said to myself, you know, AEW is taking shots at the WWE, and a lot of people like, don't worry about your own company. But I was thinking to myself, at least they're punching up. They're attempting to compete. So. Right. When we watch our shows and we watched our interviews, how many conversations did we ever say, I'd say, I sucked, you'd say you sucked, whatever, like, oh, we sucked today, you know, we were bad. I don't think Tony Khan has the cape, and this shocks me being that he runs a football and a soccer organization. He does not have the capability of identifying and competing and actually judging himself, because there's no way you're looking at this and going, this is good. Listen, I know everybody that's from the family watches a whole bunch of other shows and you listen to Busted Open. There's always an agenda. There's no way that Dave LaGreca and Bully Ray and Tommy Dreamer think this stuff is good. It's not good. It's bad. Right. In so many different ways.
Right. Well, they have their hands in the hopeful potential pockets of AEW, don't they? I mean, why don't we just call it like it is? You know, they want to maintain. See, that's the difference between you and me and most of these people out there. Everybody wants to do this and play it. You know, can I get my hand up? Yeah, everybody wants to play it nice and safe and level. And don't let me really think what I really, really think. But, you know, they'll have no problem, coming after us. I find that hilarious.
I'm glad you brought that up. So, by the way, Dylan Hines, who's an agent, he's Bobby Fulton's son. So anybody that is involved somewhat in the independent wrestling scene, Dylan Hines is a decent promoter out there. Dylan was going to come on to discuss some of the things that had happened, and I'll just share some of the things if anyone isn't aware. Dylan Hines was – his father was in a podcast, and – somehow Dylan was threatening his father during this podcast, and the podcaster, who's that, what's his name, Dookie, whatever his name is, recorded it, and you know, he milked it, right? He got his what a day out of it, right? He milked it as much as he could out of that, right? So then there was other things that went on. Supposedly Dylan was promoting CJ Perry and said some, again, all hearsay, I'm just hearing from the independent crowd that he made some advances towards CJ Perry. If anyone doesn't know who CJ Perry is, that's Rusev's ex-wife, Lana. Okay. It got so bad that supposedly Sonny Ono punched Dylan in the face and Dylan shit his pants in the bar.
Okay.
And hence Dylan has gone into hiding, from what I understand. So Dylan was going to come on the show to discuss some of this stuff. And, you know, we were going to, you know, ask him legitimate questions, right? Not skewed right. questions. So, right. But Dylan has now decided that he's been directed not to come on Long Island's number one pro wrestler broadcast.
He's been directed?
Yes.
Who was the director?
I don't know, my friend. That I don't know.
That's very interesting. You know what's funny? I mean, I know I'm generalizing here because, after all, if we're dealing with allegations, I can only summarize my own allegations. But it could be allegedly true that whoever advised him is probably the same people who talk shit behind his own back and then advise him not to come on our show. But I'm taking wild guesses.
He made a mistake not coming on because, you know, we wanted him to be able to share a story and defend himself, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, we used him. He's been an agent for us once or twice.
Right.
We never had any issues with him, really. No. Except for the time Angel Amorosa was on and said that Bobby Fulton ejaculated on her face. But that wasn't our fault that she said that.
Right. That's not our fault. At all.
Right? I mean, did we know that was coming when she said
that? Not at all.
I will blame you, though, because you made the short that was what was you titled it, Bobby Fulton, not so fantastic. Is that the one you wrote up?
Could have been. I can't remember. It's a long time ago. Look, you know, let me put, not to quote Led Zeppelin, but with all this crap we've had over the years, it goes in through the outdoor with me. It's like,
I know. Dude, I gotta tell you, this has been in this time together, we've gone through a lot of shit, bro. We have gone through a lot of shit.
It's hilarious. But Mike, if you don't mind, I do want to say one thing, if I can, to Dylan Hines, if I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dylan, I don't really know much about you, and you can trust me when I say this. Mike and I had your best interests in mind. We really wanted you to get a chance to undercut what you believe is a bunch of bullshit, and you definitely would have gotten that opportunity with us. I have seen on your page that you get depressed and that, you know, you sometimes get sickened by the wrestling business and you want to hide away. Bro, I totally get you. Okay. So whatever it is you're going through, I hope you get through it. And if, you know, you ever want to, like, you know, give Mike a shout, I'm sure Mike will talk to you because we definitely had your best interest in mind. Is that fair, Mike?
Fantastic, Jimmy. You're on mark today, man. There's not one thing I could argue about. I think we may get a little bit of a disagreement as we go right. into this now. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame performer categories in 2024. I thought we'd go through the list, Jimmy. And again, we all understand that this isn't necessarily rock and roll. Let's stop with that bullshit for everybody who's watching.
No. We are not going to wait. We're not going to stop with that bullshit. Now get to the nominees.
Mary J. Blige. Wait, Jimmy, I'm going to start with this. An incredible singer. She's got chops like crazy. She deserves to be in the Hall of Fame, but go ahead.
Could you give me her body of work time frame, please?
I'd say early 2000s till mid 2000s, and then kind of just went into acting and movies and all that other bullshit.
Okay, this is a rock and roll Hall of Famer, huh? Really?
Again, if we're gonna say rock and roll, we've worn that out. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
All right. Then I'll get it out of the way. I'll just get it out of the way right now. Rename the fucking building. It is not the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Stop doing that when you're holding out some of the pioneers of rock and roll itself.
So wait a minute. So you're telling me that Cat Stevens shouldn't be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Cat Stevens at least goes into folk rock. Okay, folk rock is something that started with bands like the Byrds. All right, what Cat Stevens does is not always purely acoustic. Okay, Cat Stevens, James Taylor, guys like that take folk and rock and mix them together, but at least there's some rock going on in there.
Simon and Garfunkel,
absolutely rock. You don't like In the Evening on your 17th beer?
Of course, but the point is, when I think about rock and roll, I don't think about James Taylor, Cat Stevens, right. You know, Simon and Garfunkel. I don't, right. You know, I don't even think about the Byrds, to be honest with you.
Well, you better. Turn, 8 Miles High is not rock. That's not rock music. 8 Miles High.
Eight Miles High, yes. Turn, Not really.
Oh my God, that cover is one of the greatest covers ever done by anybody, and it's got the sweetness of those electric guitars, the bass, the drums, those harmonies. That's a look. There are subdivisions of rock. I get it. But there are people going into the Hall of Fame that have nothing to do with rock. Rename the building. It's
agreed.
A simple fix.
Agreed. It's a simple fix.
If you fix it, I have nothing to say. You know? But now that we got that out of the way, I'm going to go with no on the first one. I don't care what the talent level is. Next.
Cher.
Cher's not rock. Here we go again. But, Cher is a legend, and I'll live with it. Okay, fine. You know, I mean, Cher's done a lot of different types of music. It started with her and Sonny and I Got You, Babe. That's a cool song. And by the way, there's some folk rock going on in that, by the way. So, okay, fine. You want to put Cher in, whatever. I disagree, though. Rename the building. But Cher is, what am I going to say? Cher is one of the all-time entertainers, period.
I agree. You can't argue Cher.
I'm not doing that.
And you can't, you know, I can understand you arguing Mary J. Blige. It's not your style. It's kind of something. Right. I get it. But I'm telling you on my end, just on overall talent, she deserves in there. All right.
She's cool. She probably does. You got to listen to her more. But like I said, I mean, she's from the 2000s. I mean, you're in already. What did you do? Stop.
Dave Matthews Band.
Yes.
But now, wait a minute. Now you're fucking me up. Because that is not rock.
I'm not fucking you up. Because if you listen to Dave Matthews, I'm staying consistent. Dave Matthews has elements of folk rock written all over him. You know? And he's eccentric rock, too. With the violin song, whatever the hell that song is, where I can't even figure out what he's doing. He's doing a higher vocal range than Eddie Vedder, but he's mumbling like Eddie does. I'm like, wow, this guy's, you know. Look, he's done enough. He's done enough in this business. He's got a massive.
I love Dave Matthews, but again, when I think
about it, I don't even love him. I just think he deserves it.
I agree. There's not that. I don't have a problem with it. But again, when I think about rock and roll, I don't think about Dave Matthews. I mean, Crash is one of the great love songs of all time, man. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's written some great tunes, you know. I think he deserves it.
All right. So. This band deserves it, but I got to tell you, Jimmy, this band quickly became like one of my most hated bands. Foreigner.
Who?
Foreigner.
This is an insult to be waiting this long. Foreigner, I agree with you, though. Foreigner, to me, is like Aerosmith. And I'll explain it this way. During the 70s, Aerosmith was truly the American answer to the Rolling Stones. What swagger, what balls they had. And they were organic and they were real and they felt like that backyard barbecue or at the beach, whatever band. They were the bomb, all right? Foreigner during the 70s. I'll never forget, Mike, the first time I heard Cold as Ice. I lost my shit. I was like 11 years old. I hear Cold as Ice. I hear this vocalist. Oh, my God. I mean, he's not even in my personal top 20, probably. But if you can't hear how great that vocalist for Foreigner was, Mr. Lou, holy moly, what a rock voice, right? But then came the 80s, okay? Here we go with MTV. Here we go with ballads. Here we go with overproducing. And in some cases, it worked for a lot of those bands. I mean, look at Pyromania. That changed the way record producers looked at everything. I know that for a fact because Eddie Kramer told me so.
Yeah.
Every producer was aspiring to get the bigness that Pyromania got. But during the 80s, Aerosmith turned into this plastic, fabricated, love in an elevator. Dude looks like a lady. All these damn, you're my angel. Come and save me tonight. Oh, my God. Save me and somebody put on Toys in the Attic. What the hell is going on here? I mean, Tyler used to sing about his big 10 inch. I don't want to hear about the dude that looks like a rag doll. Oh my God, what's next? The studio? Oh my holy BAB.
You know what's funny, Jimmy, though? That's where they were the highest of their popularity.
I know. You know, but unlike Hulk Hogan, I didn't feel like they were doing a Hulk Hogan for me. They were Hulk Hogan in the 70s, Walk This Way and Dream On and Lord of the Thighs and all those. And Foreigner did the same thing. Here come the 80s. Now, at the beginning of the 80s, let's give them props. They didn't get there yet, but they came out with Foreigner 4, but they were starting to get there. You know, Waiting on a Girl Like You is a great song. Urgent is a great song, but they were changing. And by the time the next album came out, here it comes. And it's just like when I see those legs walking, and I know it's Tina Turner, I'm like, here comes I Want to Know What Love Is.
Right.
Oh, no, I don't want to know what love is. I already have my own ideas on this, guys. I don't need to hear this song 7 quadrillion times. And it was probably their biggest hit. What do I know? But
here's a guy that I don't think deserves to be in it. And I'm sorry, Peter Frampton.
Peter Frampton should definitely be in the Hall of Fame. I cannot.
Dude,
I
can name about one Peter Frampton song. One. I cannot even name another song.
Do you feel like we do?
Yeah, that's it. That's
wait
all.
A minute. Wait that's a minute. It. Wait a minute. I want you.
Okay. Two.
Show right, me so the way.
You gave, are you two. Kidding? Give me a third.
Okay. Okay. Ooh, baby, I love your ways.
All right. Three songs. All right. Three. Three.
Come on. I just gave you three. Oh, you went from one to three. All
but
right.
Still,
and okay. Here's the last thing. And we all know how important and how legendary Kiss Alive is, right? Kiss Alive, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know that Frampton Comes Alive is the biggest selling live album in the history of rock and roll. Did you know that?
Yes.
Frampton Comes Alive.
And you know
where
were
some of the songs? And where were some of the songs?
Comac Arena, right? The Comac Arena.
There you go. There you go. Okay, Peter Frampton. Now, it's interesting. I'll just reinforce it even more. There's a great video out there from Rick Beato. And yeah, I will give him a cheap pop because that guy's fantastic. If you Beato, Rick Beato. And he did a what if, Mike, and you would have loved, maybe I've played this for you. He did a what if Eddie Van Halen and Peter Frampton had played the solo on Stairway to Heaven. What would it have sounded like? And the Beato played the Frampton, what he thinks Frampton would have done on it. And you can hear Peter Frampton all over this, and it sounds great. Nothing sounds better than Pages. Page is the template, obviously. But, oh, my God, it just enhanced, you know, through someone I have a lot of respect for, how great Frampton was and was for years. And the guy who did Van Halen, oh, my God, you guys got to hear this. It's like Eddie Van Halen stepped in and did classic Van Halen guitar solo to Stairway to Heaven. Absolutely insane. It's insane, the quality of this playing going on, you know? And just for shits and giggles, they had Eric Johnson do a version of what he would do. It was the most eclectic thing I've ever heard, and it was beautiful. But Frampton was on that level. Frampton is one of the all-time great guitar players, you know? He doesn't get mentioned enough, just like Ted Nugent doesn't get mentioned enough. Ted Nugent ripped. Ripped. And Peter Frampton was your classic 70s guitarist. Ace Frehley doesn't get enough credit. To me, they're all in the same boat. Those guys ripped.
Hard to argue with you, man, but I'm sorry. I just don't put Frampton at that level. I get what you're saying, though. I understand.
I got you.
But it's hard for me to put him on that level.
Right.
All right. Cool in the Gang.
Yes. And it's not rock and roll, but I mean, come on. You can't be ignorant. You can't be ignorant. Even towards the end, I love the song Tonight. Tonight. That freaking bass line. Oh my God. That boom.
All right. How about A Tribe Called Quest?
What?
A Tribe Called Quest. I don't know who the hell that is, dude.
Well, apparently, I've been hanging out in the East.
And last but not least, the Ozman has cometh. Ozzy Osbourne. I think he may be one of three people that are two-time Hall of Fame inductee. The great Ozzy Osbourne.
Well, I'm sure you probably know this, that all of the Beatles are two-time inductees, all of them, including Ringo. They're all two-time inductees. They're all in the Hall of Fame. Twice. Ozzy Osbourne should have been in a long time ago. I mean, what the hell were they waiting on that one? I mean, Black Sabbath had to wait forever too. Ozzy is one of the greatest frontmen ever. It's amazing how when he talks, people can't understand a word he says, but when he's like, generals gathered in their masses, I mean, everybody knows what's going on. Ozzy's one of the great pronunciators in this business as far as a singer goes. He's an incredible performer.
Let me ask you this, and this, you know, again, when you, a lot of stuff's getting dug up about Ozzy again, right?
Ah.
So I know what a huge fan you are, Ozzy, and yeah. So am I, but I'm not at the level as you, but you know, I love Ozzy too. But I was looking up some stuff and I wanted to get your feedback on this, and I'll be quick on it, but it's basically the breakdown of how Ozzy and Sharon treated all the band members, you know, from Black Sabbath and, you know the thing. So what's your feelings about the way Sharon and Ozzy treated their teammates like that?
Well, I know Sharon's the boss. I think we all know that Sharon is the boss. Sharon was the one who pulled Ozzy off the couch with the, you know, in his dirty underwear and his Coke straw. And got him to realize his value. Sharon has always been his marketer and his brain trust. So, of course, he's going to deflect everything to Sharon. Ozzy knows deep down, and I'm sure he said it from time to time, probably not too often. And when he says it, they probably don't give it the soundbite because it's not controversial enough for them. Ozzy knows what he's done. Ozzy knows that he's fucked over Bill Ward repeatedly from Black Sabbath. He knows this. He knows that he has completely fucked over Jakey Lee. I hate that, Mike. I don't know how aware you are of it, but Jakey Lee got completely ass ripped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know? I know all about it.
I don't agree with it one bit. Now, oddly enough, it's funny, but Randy, I guess, didn't live long enough to learn Sharon's bad side. You know, so Randy was the sweet kid who stayed off drugs and died tragically, and he's safe. You know, he never got to see that side of Ozzy. I don't think he would have appreciated too much, but he did get a glimpse because, you know, the original band was called Blizzard of Oz. It was at the last second that Sharon had it switched to Ozzy Osbourne and called the album Blizzard of Oz. I mean, Daisley was like the bass player who wrote a lot of the lyrics was like, what's
well, that was the reason behind it. The reason they put that as Ozzy so they could take all the money away from him, right?
Yep. And let me tell you something, that is, look, we always talk about, you know, look, a CEO is not always right, okay? And in this case, she was not right to fucking do that. I know what it takes to write songs. And it's no coincidence that John Lennon, when he wasn't sitting next to Paul McCartney, even though John Lennon himself was great in the Hall of Famer, John Lennon was greater with Paul and vice versa, okay? So when you have this shit happen, I know that Bob Daisley must have been like, this song wouldn't even happen without me. It wouldn't sound this way. Every ingredient is so crucial when it comes to making a product where there's collaboration involved. Jakey Lee wrote the riff for Bark at the Moon. Bro, that riff is just killer.
Unbelievable.
Killer.
So I guess my point to you, Jimmy, does that, you know, and when he got inducted the second time around, Ozzy threw a shot at Black Sabbath, saying, right, not too bad for a guy who got fired from a second-rate band, right? I mean, has Ozzy and Sharon kind of screwed his legacy a little bit, considering the lack of compassion, or is it just business? Like we always talk about, just business.
It's just business at the end of the day, and it's going to sound cold, but it doesn't make me love Ozzy any less. Sharon, I never liked to begin with. All right. I never did. I do appreciate what she did for him, and I understand how important she is to him, and I do respect that. But Sharon, I have no use for. Bruce Dickinson hates Sharon. Everybody hates Sharon. Sharon's a nasty bitch. She got into a fight with Bruce Dickinson when the one time that Ozzy and Maiden toured together, and it was back, I can't remember the exact year, but she had such a problem with Bruce Dickinson that she had 20 of her friends throw shit at him during the concert. I mean, how catty can you get?
Oh, by the way, Phil says Ozzy came out with the British Bulldogs to Bark at the Moon at WrestleMania 2.
There you go. There you go. Look, Ozzy transcended everything. Ozzy was just amazing. You know what scares me though, Mike? When we were younger and I was in a band, I was always thrilled with it. I always got compared to Morrison. You know, and I thought to myself, this is great. You're like a John Lennon as far as your sound, but you have that Jim Morrison stuff going on. And I thought to myself, this is great. Now, everywhere I go, whether it's on the beach over here in PCB or wherever it is. Hey, Ozzy, I don't know if this is good, bro. I mean, Ozzy, I never looked at Ozzy and was like, wow, he's mint.
Yeah, you don't. Listen, when you told me that, I'm like, yeah, that's not the look you're looking for, bro. You don't want to be like, oh, it's Ozzy Osbourne. You don't want.
Well, is it time to grow a Fu Manchu or something? I mean,
dude, I've been telling you, I think it's time for you to grow a beard. I don't think
my better half is a fan of that facial hair on me. So,
dude, I got to tell you, one of the things I have to say is when we do this from home, we could go on for 5 hours, you and me, man. That's like. I know, but it's like when we were in studio, we stayed on, like, right, on point.
We're paying for the time. We better stay on time.
All right, so Dark Side of the Ring. I wrote this up, and then I want your feedback. The recent episode of Dark Side of the Ring, featuring Sherry Martel, serves as a poignant reminder of the complexities within the world of professional wrestling. Sherry Martel, known for her unparalleled charisma in the ring, prowess, was not only a trailblazer for women in the industry, but also faced the personal struggles that we are all looked to the comment and overlook. The documentary goes deep into Martel's life, shedding light on the challenges she faced both in and out of the ring from her early days. I'm sorry, it's hard for me to read, so I got to scroll. Early days as a wrestling valet to her rise to one of the most iconic managers in WWE history, Martel's journey was marked with triumph and tribulations alike. One of the most striking aspects of the episode was the explanation of Martel's battle with addiction. Despite her success in the spotlight, she grappled with substance abuse, a struggle that ultimately contributed to her untimely passing. Thoughts on the great Sherry Martel? I wrote a much longer thing, but you get the point. First of all, what did you think about the documentary before we get into Sherry Martel?
Well, first of all, I'm surprised you haven't fainted that I actually watched the documentary, but I did.
I loved it that you did, dude. I loved it.
I did. Well, I had the heads up that we were going to be talking about it, so I figured, let me take a look at this. By the way, I thought the documentary was fantastic. Look, if you can keep my attention for an hour, you've done something. I am a jittery jitterbug, but I thought it was an excellent documentary. I've always thought that Sherry Martel was absolutely the beginning point of what we know from wrestlers today, more well-rounded than anybody out there today. She could have stepped into a ring today and gone in her prime. She was a wrestler's wrestler. She was tougher than most of the guys. I love how the picture they painted, it was very real. It felt very real. She was a flawed human being who chose her dream and her profession over her family.
Stop there. I need you to stop right there.
Okay.
So going into the documentary, obviously you and me know the story of most of these wrestlers, and we knew about Sherry Martel, and right. We knew that she had a child, and she chose wrestling just like Ric Flair chose wrestling over his family. So coming out of the Flair documentary, I thought that he had proven, like, there's two sides of me. One, I'm impressed that someone loves something so much that it takes their whole life. But then on the other hand, there's a selfishness that goes aboard that I go, you know what? There's a problem here. So my thoughts on Sherry Martel going into the documentary was, she's a fucking piece of work, dude. You have a kid and you just leave the kid so you could become a famous professional wrestler. How selfish are you? Take it from there.
Well, I got to agree with when I was watching it and it got to that point in the documentary, I thought to myself, boy, that must have been torture for her ex-husband. You know, I mean, it's true that, and how could he know just how talented she was? He wasn't even into wrestling. You could see he wasn't. All right. He had no clue about her ability level or her drive or where she was going to go. Excuse me. But it did bother me deeply that she swung so emotionally from one side to the other side only 3 months into the child being born. That bothered me. I mean, how could it not bother anybody with a conscience? You know, at the end of the day, it was very compelling because when her son came on, who's, you know, obviously he's very sick. There's, you know, I think the best friend of Sherry mentioned on the documentary, she's never asked him, but she believes he has cancer. He said, don't, judge my mother on what she did, you know? And it's rough, though, because later on, and he's honest. He's very honest about his mom. He was just like, you know, did it make you mad that you barely got to see her? And when you did see her, she'd send you home when you were supposed to be there for a week, and you would get sent back after 2 days. He goes, I'm still angry about that. So it was just...
But, you know, Jimmy, the one thing that did get me on that is, like you said, he said, don't be mad at my mother. I'm not mad at my mother.
Right.
I was like, whoa. And right. Then I was like, wow, if your own son isn't going to judge you, how dare I judge you?
There you go. Well,
and right. I was like, so kind of different than that Flair documentary.
Right.
I was like, okay. The one thing I also got, you mentioned the former husband. Did right. you get feeling like he was still in love with her?
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It broke his heart, and yeah, I did see it. Yeah, it's still in there. And how could it not be? You know.
And then how about the stepmother who no longer is the husband's wife anymore either? How much she loves Sherry's son, and then talking about right. how much they loved each other.
Right.
I got to tell you, Jimmy. I think it was last right. year you and I would talk. I'm like, Dark Side of the Ring is done. It's done. There's nothing left. Uh-huh. Between the Chris Adams episode, mm-hmm. which I thought was mm-hmm. incredible.
Right.
Because, you know, they had the Buff Bagwell one, which I thought was just awful. I was like, what are you even doing this for? It's just bad.
Right.
But the Chris Adams one and this one, the Sherry one, I'm like, right. keep them going. Because this was, yes. I'll ask you to weigh in on this, obviously, but I was not a Sherry fan when I was younger. I found her annoying. I didn't like her. I got to appreciate her more as I got older, just like with Backlund and some other stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I really came out of this documentary going, wow, this was a pretty incredible lady.
She was. She was obviously tough, but she was obviously fragile. You know, it's possible to be both. It's possible to be incredibly, incredibly tough, but it's also possible to simultaneously sometimes be fragile. I mean, some of the brightest people are like that. She was a very bright person, and she felt guilt. Didn't you feel that coming off of her? She still felt guilt right to the end about the decision she made, but she did make the right choice ultimately for her. And if her son's not mad at her, how the hell can we be?
That's the straight up point right there, Jimmy. Who are right. we to judge if your own son isn't mad?
You can't. You know,
Jimmy. Really, I got to interrupt you because this is important.
Yeah.
The Jets pick at number 11, outside tackle. I don't know, Olumiyo Fashuna from Penn State.
Well, all right. Before I say anything, what happened to Alt? And what happened to the wide receivers?
Let me see.
Mr. Harrison Jr., what happened to Odunze?
The Vikings jumped ahead of the Jets. The Jets swapped picks with them, and they took QB J.J. McCarthy.
All right.
The Bears took Rome Odunze from Washington.
Okay.
The Falcons took a quarterback. Man, a lot of quarterbacks went. Took a tackle.
What's the position of the guy we drafted? I've heard the name.
Outside tackle.
So he's a lineman.
He's a lineman. They go lineman heavy, bro. We know this is happening.
All right. Now, coming from a logical point of view, if you've been watching what the Jets have been doing this offseason, logically that makes sense. Because the thing I'm worried about the most is that I've told you before, and you agree with this, the game's won in the trenches.
Absolutely.
All right. So I want as many... Not serviceable. I want as many top-end guys as possible on that offensive line. And if he's going to, you know, strengthen that, then fine. You know, if he's backing up, I'm not sure I agree with this. Now, where did Brock Bowers go? Has he been taken?
I don't see him taken yet.
Who took Joe Alt?
I think the Chargers. I think I saw all the Chargers.
Well, Alt was really the guy. If I was going to go for a lineman, it would have been Alt. But it sounds like everybody – I'm surprised they didn't take Brock Bowers. So you know what that must mean, because Aaron carries a lot of weight. Aaron obviously felt that getting an offensive lineman was more important for his safety and his ability to make that extra half-second count.
Well, dude, we're going for the Super Bowl. We can't have what happened last year.
No.
We've got to go all guns a-blazing.
Yeah, we can't have the offensive line falling apart.
So we both enjoyed the documentary. I want to remind everybody, I return in studio May 2nd. That's this next Thursday with Stan Hansen. And Jimmy, you'll be doing that interview with me with Stan Hansen.
All right.
Hopefully that connection works well again. I think we're going to be good. And then on May 3rd, we've got Tony Garea in studio, which is huge for both of us. And Scott McGee will also be in studio. So we got some, you know, we're asking everybody to join us. So, Jimmy, I thought it was a good time to, before we get to it, we covered the whole Tony Khan thing. I don't think we have to really get into that anymore. We both said probably the worst shit we've ever saw. So I thought we bring back Head to Head, where we put two wrestlers, preferably never wrestled each other ever, probably from two different eras in a lot of times. We've been doing this for a long time, but it's been a long time since we've done it. Jimmy.
I don't remember the rules.
Oh, you know?
Well, there were five categories. I remember that much.
All right, so I'm going to name the category, and you're going to explain it, okay? So what we do is we put two wrestlers against each other, and then me and Jimmy will go back and forth, and then eventually there'll be a winner. We've had draws and stuff. I think the biggest argument you and I have ever had since then, and correct me if I'm wrong, was Sting Ultimate Warrior, where I was saying Ultimate Warrior, and you said Sting, and that became a very heated couple of weeks with us because we kept on going, still continued the argument. Matt Skills, explain to the audience, Matt Skills.
Oh, Matt Skills should be pretty obvious. What can you do in the ring? Are you, a one-trick pony, or do you have the, the Daniel Bryan thing going on? That's the Matt Skills right there.
How about Mike Skills?
Well, Mike Skills, once again, self-explanatory. Are you Hulk Hogan, or are you, Nia Jax's golden moment, my hole?
It factor.
It factor. Oh, I don't know. Macho Man Randy Savage, Roddy Piper. I mean, today would be CM Punk. I went there. Of course. Do you have it factor, or do you have shit factor? Am I running to the refrigerator to get a V8?
Jimmy, a wrestler had the most it factor since you've been watching.
The most it factor of all time?
All time.
Oh, I mean, it's a fist fight between Hogan, Austin, and The Rock, probably. But it would be something.
Maybe throw a little Superstar Graham in there.
Of course, he's got it factor off the chart. Absolutely.
Back of the baseball card.
Well, this is where resumes do count. Championships count. Tournaments won count. What's the back of your baseball card? I mean, are you a compiler like Harold Baines? You know what? You could win this contest if you're somebody like that.
Overall influence on the industry.
Well, that's reserved for the obvious ones, whether you're Hogan, whether you're Austin, whether you're, Taker. I mean, what did you leave behind? Piper was a huge influence on this industry. Macho Man was too. Vince McMahon obviously is. I mean, he's the most influential of them all, So the impact on the industry is what it is. I mean, what kind of footprint did you leave in the sand? How large is your footprint?
All right, tonight's contest is a tough one.
Yeah.
The show who's about, the great Sherry Martel.
Yeah.
Versus Rhea Ripley.
Wow. Really? I love how you throw this on me without telling me, you jerk.
That's the best part of it. All right, we're going to open up with Matt Skills. Jimmy, you'll start with Matt Skills, and I'll counter unless I don't have a counter.
Rhea Ripley
or Sherry Martel?
Sherry Martel.
Wow.
It's not even close. It's not even close. There ain't nothing that I've seen Rhea Ripley do that Sherry couldn't do in her sleep. Sherry also took better bumps. Sherry also threw better punches. Yeah, you heard me. Sherry Martel was just an absolute animal in the ring. And that's not saying that Rhea's not. Rhea's great, okay? Right now, we are comparing great from the past to great in the present. Let me get that out of the way. But no, Sherry Martel in the ring was an absolute buzzsaw. Ain't nothing she couldn't do. There ain't no story she couldn't tell. And the fact that she irritated you, Mike, is all she probably ever wanted to do. That she's fantastic at what she did in that ring.
So I'm going to disagree with you on this point. Sherry Martel was an old school wrestler. She had a great arsenal of moves. Mm-hmm. She knew how to slow it down. There wasn't a bump she wouldn't take.
Right.
But she does not and did not
or I'm sorry, she did not have the athleticism that Rhea Ripley possesses. Rhea Ripley possesses power, agility. Rhea Ripley is a close second to the great Charlotte Flair, who I think we both agree is the greatest woman's pro wrestler around. And if you want to compare against men, she can actually go on, get with you with some men too. So again, I understand where you're coming from, but I'm going to go with Rhea. So right now we're at 1-1.
Okay.
Next one, Mike Skills.
God, this is not even close. Again, it's not even close. Sherry Martel could talk to a tree, and the tree would be mesmerized, and the tree doesn't understand English. All right? Sherry Martel was that great on the microphone. She was just amazingly irritating, amazingly intense. She could sell anything, anything. You know, it's no coincidence that Jim Cornette's first protege was Sherry Martel. I loved that little nugget on the documentary. Boy, I love that she signed his autograph too. I was your first. Don't forget.
That was awesome. Awesome.
That's fantastic. I think you're going to agree with me on this.
Well, this is why I let you go first on this, because I knew you did a home run on it. And you can't argue. It's not even close. In fact, Rhea is, one of your favorite words, serviceable on the mic, right? Where Sherry Martel was a star on the mic.
Right. She's getting better, though, Rhea. She is.
Absolutely. It Factor. Tough one.
Yeah, this is a tough one. I'm gonna be realistic, though. I'm going to give this to Rhea. When Rhea walks into a room, it's like, oh, my God, really? You know, she just – and that's a huge, huge cap of – you know, tip of the cap to Rhea Ripley. I mean, we're talking Sherry Martel. Sherry Martel had absolute magnetism. But Rhea, like, if you're just talking It Factor, just looking at them before you see anything out of them, Rhea Ripley is the most impressive. And, Mike, I'm on record already. Rhea Ripley is the greatest power woman in the history of this business already.
All right.
I believe that. I mean, you look at her, it's like, I'm not fighting her. No, I'm not fighting her.
When you looked at Sherry Martel as the wrestler Sherry Martel, you said, okay, there's a woman. When you saw her glammed up as a manager, you said, okay, there's a wrestler.
Right.
But you say, when you see a Rhea Ripley, you go, that's a somebody. Yeah. So I agree with you 100% Rhea It Factor all the way. So I got Rhea 2-1. You've got Sherry 2-1. So
correct.
Back of the baseball card, sir.
Well, Sherry loses this one. She loses this one.
Wait a minute. Why? She's managed champions. She's won championships.
You know what? You're probably right about that. And you know something? I'm going to have to retract a little bit because, and I feel like it's forgotten about, but Sherry beat Moolah for the belt.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she did. She did beat Moolah for the belt. But here's the question. The times may have been more important in a lot of ways to a lot of people, but was that belt worth more? And more important to people back then, the way the women's championship is today? No.
Listen, that's a great point.
I'm gonna stick with Rhea, you know? I'm gonna stick with Rhea.
I'm gonna go with Sherry on this. So you got Rhea. So it looks like we're both tied at 2-2.
We're both tied. Going into the final category. All right.
This is tough, brother. Overall influence on the industry.
Sherry, it's not tough. It's not tough, Mike. It's not. Sherry Martel, like I said, look, name me another woman that was great in the ring, great on the mic, and great as a manager. You cannot. Not on her level. No way. Sherry was the template for everything the women aspire to be today. And if they're smart, they'll go back and watch as many tapes of her as possible. All right? I mean, there's a lot of them that are bland right now. Watch some tapes of Sherry. Take a little bit from her. You know? I mean, Sherry could get anything and anybody over. She had such an impact on this business. It's not even funny. The guys wanted to hang out with her. She was cooler than the guys. And let me tell you, it's funny, too, when you said she was in the ring, yeah, a wrestler. You could see she was a wrestler. When she was not in the ring, you could see she was a woman. Let me tell you, she was more than that. She was the woman that would kick the shit out of half the guys in the bar. I'm impressed with that kind of stuff. May call me twisted, but man, oh man, that's a girl after, you know, it's hard to break that mold, man. That was made one time.
I agree with you 100%. Sherry wins this one, a close one.
Yeah.
And to be fair, if we did this 5 years from now, it might not be the same result. Who knows? I'm not sure.
Who knows? Rhea's in the middle of writing some legendary stuff right now, so we'll see what happens.
So I want to remind everybody, let's go through the schedule on the Monty and the Pharaoh channel. We've got Dan and Benny on Tuesdays. We've got What a Day on Wednesdays. We've got the new Jeopardy game, which, Jimmy, you think you'll be a participant on that? I think you'd have a good time with that one.
You know how I am about this stuff. We'll see.
I know. And then, obviously, you got the main show, Monty and the Pharaoh, and then you've got Wrestling Remembered on Fridays. True Crime has been on a hiatus, the baseball thing, and we're working with some other talent to bring on. Missy Beefcake will hopefully be coming on. I'm supposed to have a meeting with Jonathan Coachman, Jimmy. Jonathan Coachman may be coming to the channel.
Our coach. We're going to have two coaches now? Interesting.
Got two coaches.
All right.
You are watching Long Island's number one pro wrestler broadcast, Monty DeFaro. Catch us on the Monty DeFaro YouTube page, the Monty DeFaro Facebook Live page. Hear us on iHeartRadio, Spotify, or wherever you can get all audio. We're also on New York Cable, where over 150,000 people watch us weekly on Channel 115 every Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. and Wednesday at 7 p.m. and Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Jimmy, thoughts on today's show, my friend?
Oh, I had a blast. I always do when it's just you and me chilling out because, you know.
It is good stuff. One thing, before you go, Luce, I just want to say one thing. Luce thought there was some heat between me and him. So I wanted to make something clear. So Joe, again, I like Joe a lot. He thinks I pick on him, but I don't pick on him. I like him. But But Joe was interviewing Gerard, who's in the room. And I felt that, and again, this is my opinion as someone watching it. I'm not saying it was a bad interview. I liked the interview. Okay. But I felt Joe was too much on the other side of, you know, he was not anti-Gerard, because that's not the right statement, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And then, but at some point that I felt the interview was almost getting a little bit homophobic, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah, this is Monty's opinion.
Okay.
So Luce had made a comment, and then I used the word homophobic on the response to him. And then I thought to myself, you know what? I don't know if that's fair to Joe What a Day, right? Because I was like, that's not Joe's intention, right? So I'm like, you know, sometimes you got to be careful with your words. So I think Luce thought I was mad at him or something like that. So Luce, I just want to tell you, bro, here's one thing with me, and Jimmy, you could attest to this, right?
Yeah.
I can disagree with you on a lot of shit, and I'm going to argue with you if I disagree with you. But I always respect everybody's opinion, right? And sometimes you can convince me otherwise. Jimmy, you do it all the other time. So anyway, Luce, I know you thought maybe there was some heat. By the way, Gerard writes, I didn't mind it. I like the challenge, begging to take on the weasel Lee Cole. Whoever thought that Lee Cole would ever become this important, this independent wrestling world bullshit. But so my only point is, like, I love the fact, especially with the family that's in the room now. Lou says, all good, brother. I thought it was a tech guy that didn't know me. No, bro, I just was like, I love the family here because everybody's got an opinion and no one gets nasty. And, you know, again, sometimes I say things that aren't the best. We just had to talk about it a week ago, right? What did I say to you, Jimmy?
What's that? You got to refresh me. I can't remember yesterday.
Remember I said to you, I go, do you think I go over the line sometimes too much?
You're really good at teetering. You teeter. You're like right there. Right there.
Right. Like you and me both have some very strong opinions. And,
right.
You know,
hold on, Mike. Let me get this in, because this is really important. Okay. When we give our strong opinions on someone or something, all right, we usually give our strong opinions when it's you and me. When we're interviewing somebody, we do not. And if you can go back and check all our interviews, because it's true, we do not have an agenda, and we allow the person to tell their story. We don't get accusatory. We don't try to steer our opinion into them. And that to me would wreck an interview, quite honestly. You know, you want the guest comfortable and you want the guest to tell their side. That's what we do. Okay. When we're done talking with them, hey, if we disagreed with some of the stuff they said, we'll say it to afterwards to each other. It's not right. It's not being avoidance. It's giving a professional interview and letting the person have their piece. That's the bottom line.
That's
it doesn't
right.
matter if we agree or disagree with them when we're interviewing them. We're not looking to have conflict every single interview. If we did that, every interview would probably end with an FU. You know, that's not how you give interviews.
And dude, like, again, there's plenty of guys out there that know much more wrestling than me, for sure.
Of course.
If that's what you want to hear, I we want to hear the insides. By the way, RJ Hudson says, Joe's all right. I like him, but he's a lot of a news reporter more than an interviewer. Here's the one thing I do want, man, and I got to be honest with you. When this is all said and done, I'm going to demand an apology from people once Vince McMahon walks away from this whole thing.
You ain't going to get it.
Oh, I'm going to demand it. Because you know what? If you got a big enough mouth to try to crucify this dude, and now it's all going the wrong way on you, it's right. like, you know, be a man or be a woman and step up and go, you know what? Maybe I should think before I speak.
Right. Right. Well, unfortunately, you know, or fortunately, depending on your perception, Vince falls into that, you know, love him or hate him deal. You know, you might as well call him Axl Rose. Either you love him or you want to see him strung up by his toes. And that's the category Vince falls into. You're never going to get true apologies from people if this all, you know, dissipates. It's not going to happen. You know, they'll move on to the next one they can't stand and concentrate on that.
I want to give a shout out to the great Bruce from ESO. He produced tonight's show. Always does a fantastic job. And again, we're back in studio, guys. We want you to join us. I think we're going to do one main show before Stan Hansen. Then we're going to interview Stan Hansen. Then the following day, we got Tony Garea and the other guy.
Scott McGee, you bonehead.
Oh, my God. Help me, Spock.
That's hilarious.
But I will tell you, Stan Hansen's an icon. And I can guarantee this. This, I promise you, will be Stan Hansen's last interview, period. Wow. I know he's not touring anymore after this, mm-hmm. and I guarantee mm-hmm. that he will not be interviewing with anybody. And Jimmy, for you and me, on a personal basis, yeah. Tony Greer is a big deal, dude, right? I mean,
absolutely.
That's the start of it all right there.
Yeah, right there. Tony Greer, Rick Martel, the Moondogs, the Samoans, Killer
Jimmy,
Khan.
Can I open up the first question just asking him, what does that tattoo on his arm mean?
Sure, why not?
Hasn't that always bothered you all these years?
No, but you're like an army guy. I guess you look at tattoos very carefully. Why? What is this tattoo?
Remember, it was an angel fish or some shit. I was like, oh. What does that represent, an angel fish?
I don't know. I have no idea. It definitely doesn't represent Angel Amoroso.
Oh, Jesus Christ almighty. All right, one last thing before we go. I got to take my shot at it. Is there anything you want to announce?
No.
Okay. Well, we'll just keep trying.
You're funny, man. You know, I'll give you this much though. Maybe it should have been discussed more behind the scenes, but as of now, no. But interesting things are coming. Let's put it that way. Interesting things are coming. Very
well,
special
excited.
Things.
Very I want to thank everybody. I love you guys all. Jimmy, let's send us out, buddy.
You've been watching Monty and the Pharaoh, and until next time, later.